This is the Jets Blog Post Game Podcast.
Welcome back to the Jets Blog Post Game Podcast. I'm your host, Corey Griffin, and with me, as always, on the other line, it's Brian Bassett. Hey, buddy.
Hi.
I see you're the depressed one this week.
Well, no, I mean, you know, we kind of expected this, right? Didn't we talk about this on Friday, Thursday, whenever we talked, that, you know, I didn't think this was going to be a close game, and lo and behold, it wasn't a close game.
Yeah, well, lo and behold, you play two of the best teams in the NFL in back-to-back weeks. You get outclassed in back-to-back weeks. It's not all that surprising. There's a lot to go into in the Jets' 31-13 loss to the Pittsburgh Steelers on Sunday, which we will delve into. We will talk about the offense, the defense, the coaching, maybe even a little ownership discussion if I have my way. Before we do that, a quick programming note: to listen to all of SNY.TV's original podcasts covering all the New York teams, the Jets, Mets, Knicks, Rangers, Giants, all those wonderful sports clubs, just subscribe to the SNY.TV audio network on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts. That's the SNY.TV audio network. Please rate and review our channel so that we can continue to do great shows like this, including your calls, which we should just get right into.
S-O-L-J, same old lousy Jets. Doug Schiffer from Cortland Manor. Man, they keep saying they just got to clean up, just got to clean up. I've been hearing that since Mark Sanchez has been saying that 10 years ago. Just got to clean up this, got to clean up that. They must have the dirtiest damn stadium around. Goodbye.
That's pretty good. There is a lot of cleanup going on. I do get the feeling that there's a never-ending amount of janitorial work for the New York Jets. Don't you, Corey?
I'm just frustrated. And I think I'm frustrated in the same way that Doug is, and I think the same way a lot of people are, the same way you are, in that some of these problems aren't surprising. Mm-hmm. You know, they were going to regress to the mean on some of these 50-50 underthrows that Fitzpatrick loves. You know, they were going to regress to the mean in terms of turnover ratio. They were going to regress to the mean, you know, in terms of red zone offense. But the fact that all that is happening while Darrell Revis has fallen off a cliff, while the secondary continues not to talk, while Calvin Pryor has regressed to his rookie level of play, while Sheldon Richardson is forced to play outside linebacker because Jordan Jenkins is not ready and Lorenzo Maldon bulked up because they wanted him to play the run as an edge rusher. I'm getting frustrated because all I'm seeing is questionable decisions, and then I'm seeing defenses of it. And we'll get into the coaching and all that later, but I don't think this is a four-win team, and I think the frustrating part of that is that either they are a three or a four-win team, and this season just goes right to hell, and we have to spend the entire rest of the season talking about whether they should fire their coach after he went 10-6 in their first year and the GM won GM of the year, or they win 7 or 8 games, pick 14th, don't get the quarterback to replace Ryan Fitzpatrick, and have to cut their $70 million corner and replace him with who next season?
The 14th pick. Right? I mean, right? Isn't that where this goes?
It is. I mean, like, where are the easy solutions here?
I think there are zero easy solutions here. And I mean, you know, I don't know how long we have to talk through this whole thing, but right. I don't know. Like the last 2-3 games, you know, I didn't even watch the game in real time yesterday. I just couldn't deal with it. And our power was out from the storm and took the kids out and we had a lot of fun. And so I caught up later, but I watched the cut up on NFL Game Pass, and I don't know how many times I saw Ryan Fitzpatrick stand in the pocket, start to climb in the pocket, start to shuffle, look like he's going to run the ball, and then, you know, get like, you know, dragged down from the back. And it's like, dude, you just can't hold the ball that long or think you're going to run the ball against really any team. So there's so many issues here, and you're right. The quarterback needs to be addressed. The secondary, I mean, was just utterly exposed, you know, yesterday against one of the best passers in the NFL, maybe in the last 30 years. Too many issues and too good a team to try and get right against.
Yeah, well, there's one main issue, and it's been an issue for about 7 years, and I think that our next call will illuminate that thusly.
Hi, this is Drew from Little Silver, New Jersey, otherwise known as DKNYJ.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just wondering why, for seems like a couple of years now, everyone seems to think that three or four really good 3-4 defensive ends / defensive tackles will result in a pass rush. Same thing with Rex's defense. The blitz will result in a pass rush. We don't have a pass rusher. We haven't had a pass rusher since John Abraham. So I'm just curious, why can we just stop talking about how good our pass rush is without an actual pass rusher? Thanks, guys. Love the blog. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, DKNYJ. Long time reader of the site. So thank you, buddy. I think it's well said, right? And I thought we were moving into this era of the NFL where, and I still do believe it to some degree, where the interior pass pressure is almost or more important than exterior pass pressure. But when you play a guy like Ben Roethlisberger, when you play a guy who has like the talent that he has at wide receiver, it looks pretty bad. What do you think, Corey?
I don't agree that the interior pass rush will ever become more important than the external pass rush, because they have to work in tandem, and you can't exclusively go to one or the other. If you can't push the pocket in the inside, as you said, then you're never going to force the quarterback out of his comfort zone into the exterior pass rush. If you can't rush on around the edges, then the quarterback can just move around within wherever the 3-4 defensive linemen are getting push and slide to the right, slide to the left, slide up front, and find time to pass. I mean, we've seen it now all season. We saw it at times last season. We've seen it for the better part of 6 years. And this raises the bigger question of the Jets investing heavily in the same player three different times. Mm. You know, Sheldon Richardson is a slightly different player than Muhammad Wilkerson or Leonard Williams. But Leonard Williams and Muhammad Wilkerson are the same player. And I think it's pretty clear after a year and a half of Leonard Williams that Leonard Williams is a better version of Muhammad Wilkerson. So it then highlights the idea that the decision by Mike Maccagnan to cave, to invest in Muhammad Wilkerson, to invest in that defensive line with three similar type of players, and now put them in a position where they have to use Sheldon Richardson as a freaking outside linebacker time after time after time after time. And it's okay if you use it on gadget plays or certain things as a disguise, but I shouldn't be seeing Sheldon Richardson as their pass rusher on third and long every time.
No, you're right. You shouldn't, and they do need that guy, and they just... As DKNY just said, they just don't have that guy, right? They
refuse to go get him.
They refuse to go get that guy. But the funny thing is think about, well, here's one thing I never thought about for Muhammad Wilkerson, Sheldon Richardson, and Leonard Williams. Do any of them, did any one GM draft all three of those guys? Or like they were all drafted by different GMs, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Isn't that so weird? I never thought about it until now, but they were drafted by different guys, and maybe they think, well, this guy's better, or this guy's different, or I don't know, but right. It does put a, I mean, listen, I get why they drafted Leonard Williams. Like at that point, at the sixth pick or whatever
it was. That was the right pick. Leonard Williams was the right pick.
Yes, but then, right, why are you then investing in, you know, whatever? You've got this embarrassment of riches, and those guys are great, but yeah, you've got to give them some sort of athletic, you know, jaguar on the outside to get around the edge. And I'm sorry, but the guys they have just can't get it done. They're not athletic enough. They're not, you know, they don't have the burst, and it's just not working. And right, so then you get to what they're doing with Sheldon Richardson, which is misusing him, essentially, is what they're doing.
Yep. I'm just going to point out one thing before we move on real quick. Maybe John Idzik knew what he was doing. Next question.
Hi, my name is Joe Cruz from Freehold, New Jersey. Question about Coach Bowles. I know his expertise is on defense. When are we going to start seeing more blitz packages? I know it doesn't have to be constantly, but more so than under 2 minutes left. That's when I see blitzes. Last year, he would blitz a lot more. Thank you.
Look, it's a good question. Go ahead.
They can't.
Go ahead.
Well, they can't blitz. They can't. I mean, what are they going to? Who are they going to blitz? Lorenzo Malden is a step slow, and he's not playing anymore because he's overweight. Because they asked him to gain weight. Jordan Jenkins isn't ready to play. Throw you down to what? Trevor Riley and Catapano as your linebackers. The blitzes are obvious when they're going to come, how they're going to come, where they're going to come, and you're leaving the underneath routes open. That's what was killing the Jets against Seattle. That's what killed the Jets against Kansas City. The Jets sent blitz packages, and the guys just picked them apart underneath. The linebacker position is a major, major liability right now because they're just not there in terms of the young guys being able to be reliable players, and David Harris is a step slower, and the guys up front are not getting the push. So, it sounds like the blitz is an automatic fix to your pass rush woes. But again, we can go back to it. The automatic fix to your pass rush woes is a freaking pass rusher.
Yeah, but at the same time, what about those double-A gap blitzes that you love so much from Todd Bowles in his days in Arizona? And we saw a lot last year. Are we just not seeing him this year? Or here's maybe more my question. Is he not blitzing because he's afraid of who he has on the back end of his defense? Like, well, you know, if you're going to blitz, that's great. But that means you've got less guys in coverage, right?
Ding, ding, ding.
So if you feel confident and you've got Antonio Cromartie and you've got Darrell Revis, you know, and you've got Buster Screen and you've got Marcus Williams and you've got, a secondary that's not, you know, that's holding it together like they did in 2015, you can blitz. This year, Darrell Revis is whatever he's doing. You know, I mean, I think that secondary, for as tough a day as they had, I think they looked like a little bit more like, I don't know, a little scrappier or something with him not out there, even though it wasn't as talented for sure. And I mean, they were up against Antonio Brown, who's one of the best players in the league. So I think it has more to do with the secondary than it has to do with the blitzing.
I think that's fair. Let's move to the other side of the ball with our next question.
Hi, this is Ike from Port Jefferson, New York. I thought the game was terrible. I thought we got completely outcoached. And I'm really wondering why we would go away from a running game that has worked every chance it's really gotten. Why does Chan Gailey keep going away from the running game?
Well, I think it comes down to game script, right, Corey? I mean, mm-hmm. You know, if you're losing by whatever, 8 points, you know, whatever it was, I'm trying to think. It was like 13-14, and then it went to 21? 24.
24, yeah.
Yeah, so like once you start
They were
start
down
getting,
11. They went down 11.
Yeah, I mean, so but I get it. But when the game script changes and you're playing from behind, you know, let's just say 7 to 12 points, you've got to start throwing the ball more. You can't keep running the ball, and so that's one reason why I think it happens. And right when you've got one ultra target and then a couple guys who are pretty good, that doesn't help matters. When Eric Decker gets back, you know, maybe that changes things a little bit, and you don't have to worry so much about going away from the run game. But I certainly think in game script situations where you've got to throw the ball to get back into the game, you have to do it. But then, you know, we didn't really see it yesterday, but, you know, we certainly have the last couple of weeks when, you know, Ryan Fitzpatrick, he throws a pick or he starts throwing a couple picks. It's like he just goes on tilt and you just can't keep it in. I don't know. What do you think, Corey?
Look, we can harp on the whole Powell versus Forte thing. We've already made our statements clear. Forte doesn't have the burst anymore. He can still make a guy miss. He's still good enough to read the offense and hit the hole where it's necessary, but he doesn't have the burst that Powell does. Powell should be playing more. We've made that point 1,000 times over. I can't keep making it game after game. That said, there are plays that Chan Gailey is calling that are there, that are executable first down, big chunk plays, and either their balls are being misplaced, the balls are being underthrown, Ryan Fitzpatrick is taking too long to get the ball out of his hands. They have a bad quarterback. They have a bad quarterback who is inaccurate, who doesn't have the arm strength to go downfield and isn't accurate enough on underneath routes. So when that's your quarterback and you basically, as I thought Joe Caparoso summed up nicely in his recap, either yesterday or today, I couldn't remember, the Jets can essentially run three types of routes. They can run back shoulder fades. They can run screens, and they can run intermediate slants and crossers. That's it. That's all this offense can do with Ryan Fitzpatrick at quarterback. And it's an extremely easy to defend offense. And it also makes defending the run at the same time easier because you don't have to respect anything deep. And it makes guys like Robbie Anderson and Sherrone Peak and Devin Smith, when he gets back, less functionable because they can't threaten vertically. So this all comes back to a quarterback who is inaccurate on most routes, and is not throwing guys open and puts the Jets in a really tough spot on the offense. So I don't know if you have anything else to say about Chan Gailey, but I have a lot to say about our last question, and I think we should spend a lot of time there. So let's move on to our last question.
Kevin Cox, Section 128, Cedar Run, New Jersey. I'd really like to know when the coaching staff is going to start making some adjustments at halftime. We're getting beat in the second half of every game. It appears the coaching staff is clueless as to what to do to counter what happened in the first half. It really appears like they're doing a bad coaching job.
Hi, this is Chez from Jet Sadness. Is it Halloween? Has Herman Edwards dressed up as Todd Bowles? What are you doing? Punting? Fourth and two from midfield, down 11 with two timeouts.
Do you just want me to start ranting now, or do you want to get your points in before?
No, you go. I just want to hear. I want to hear you go.
So the good news is I was 7 beers deep by the time that play happened, so I was sufficiently numb to the outrage. That said, what the f***, Todd Bowles? What in all of dear God, conservatism. You know what? I struggled to figure out what was more conservative. The BS that I watched on my TV from 9 to 11 last night, or the BS that I watched in the fourth quarter against the Steelers. Dear Lord, Todd, you are down 11 points. The rationale, the thing that really, really, really upset me was the rationale. The thought that he said, I stand by it. I defend it. I do it again because we were hoping to punt them, pin them down, stop, get the ball back, lose 1 to 2 minutes with two timeouts, and then figure out a way to get two scores from midfield. Well,
because
they had
done such a good job stopping the Steelers offense all day.
Right. So either A, Todd Bowles has too much faith in his defense, which is a major problem because he's unaware of the struggles of the unit that he is mostly responsible for, which a problem
struggle
we saw.
Real.
With the problem we saw with Rex Ryan the last 5 years, or he's stubborn enough to think that he actually made a good decision. And the fact that he said 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, whatever it was, when he admitted that he made a bad decision in a similar situation, and he would make some mistake. I don't think Todd Bowles is learning. And I don't think Todd Bowles is realizing his mistakes. And I think that he's either too stubborn to make his mistake to realize that these are mistakes, or this is just the way he's wired. And this is the way he thinks you coach successfully to win games. Guess what, Todd? It's not. And if you're going to continue to punt these things away inside the 55, inside the around the 50 yard line to the 40 yard line, and continue to kick field goals on fourth and short when the Jets are playing an offense that can score at will, you're going to lose games and you're going to be out of a job faster than you should be. And I'm not saying the Jets should fire Bowles. I'm not saying that at all. Mm-hmm. I think all of that talk is absolutely ridiculous. Okay. But I'm saying you put yourself in the firing zone when you not only make these terrible decisions, but then you stand by them and say, I would do it again. Less than, 10 minutes after it lost you the game, basically.
Well, yeah. And I think that's the end there was great. It was all really good. So well done. But I think the big thing there is, right, if you're just an innocent bystander watching this, you can see the erosion of support. Like you're just watching it wash away, right? Like you're just watching it go. And when you continue to do these things, the more vocal fans who pay close attention, they see those sorts of things and they start talking and they start talking and they start talking and, and it's already happening. And I think he's a good coach. I think he's an old school coach. I think he, he can get his guys motivated and pointed in the right direction. He dealt with a mess last year and, credit to him for what he came up with in training camp with Geno and Ryan Fitzpatrick and, the defense. You're seeing a situation play out where if we don't see aggressive changes by December, the fan base is going to start splitting on him, right? And it's only
they already are.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you're right.
We got a fire Bulls call last week. It was the first call of the show was fire Bulls. And I think that's ridiculous. And I think he I think that he should be around for, you know, at least I don't even think there should be a conversation until the middle of next year. I don't care if they win four games this year. The dude went 10-6 in his first year. You know, and we just you have to give a regime time, regardless of whether you think it's immediately successful, unless they are a two and 28 team over the course of 2 years. If he comes out of his first 2 years with one bad and one good, we have to see what he is in his third. We have to give him another season. But the problem is that he's not progressing. He's regressing, and he's not just regressing from season to season. He's regressing on a weekly basis. That was a terrible decision. It was a terrible decision.
It was so bad.
And he defended it. And I think the real problem here is that Mike Maccagnan, not the real problem, but another problem is Mike Maccagnan has gotten a free pass. And he's made some really questionable decisions with this roster management. As we talked about, not investing in a pass rusher, not investing or investing too much in the defensive line, paying Darrell Revis, which, you know, at the all time we all thought it was a good move, is clearly turning out to be not. Not calling Ryan Fitzpatrick's bluff and signing someone like Brian Hoyer for about $9 million less. Not aligning your skill talent at skill positions to the strengths of your quarterback and vice versa. Not developing the offensive line. Jarvis Harrison's already gone. And also an ownership group that wants immediate success, regardless of the fact that they've had three GMs in 5 years.
Right.
You can't succeed that way in the NFL. They've had three GMs and two coaches in 5 years. You have to build and you have to give your guys time to install a regime and install talent and build depth of talent over time. And when you don't do that at the ownership level, you force guys like Mike Maccagnan to make immediate decisions when they are hired to build for 5 years from now instead of right now.
Yeah, I agree. And right. And that's the ultimate question here is, will Woody feel like he needs to pull the trigger again right now? If he was smart when he made these decisions, right, which he made 18 months ago, whatever long, almost 2 years ago now, you know, to bring in Maccagnan and to bring in Todd Bowles, you know, he did that and he had to know that, yes, while we want to be competitive, we want to sell tickets, we want to sell merchandise, in the short term, we still have to have a plan for the long term. And the only way to come up with a long-term plan is to let people be there long enough to have a long-term plan. Just ask the Cleveland Browns, right? I mean, just ask the Cleveland Browns. You're swapping defenses, you're swapping schemes, you're swapping coaches, you're swapping GMs, you know, again and again and again and again. So you can't keep repeating this cycle, right? But, right, does Woody have the intestinal fortitude to do that? And, right, he hasn't shown us any intestinal fortitude in the last couple of years. So in terms of the way he makes decisions and keeping Rex and not keeping the GM and then keeping, you know, whatever. It was just a mess. So I want to see change, and you're right, it starts with the coaching position and how he handles a 4th and 2 at midfield in the end of the game when you're trailing. You have to make different decisions. But the one thing I will say, just not to defend Bowles, but just to say, remember Riverboat Ron when he kind of got all, you know,
yes,
you know, gambling man. I mean, the difference is he had Cam Newton, and I'm not saying, well, you need to have Cam Newton to be able to make, you know, gambling calls, but when you have a quarterback you can rely on, you're more than willing to do that. I mean, Bill Belichick, et cetera, et cetera. When you have a player that you can put a little faith and trust in a 4th and 2 situation in midfield, then you're going to be more willing to do that. They don't have that guy, right? They just have that guy.
It's totally fair. That's a well appointed note to end this show on. Thank you to Doug, Drew, Joe, Ike, Kevin, Chez. Thank you to everyone who didn't get on the show. Thank you to everyone who called in. We very much appreciate your input. We appreciate your patience with the Jets as the season continues on. I hope that you guys continue to call in, because that's how we get to do these shows. I also hope you guys continue to rate and review us on iTunes. You can find us at the SNY.TV Jets or the Jets Blog Podcast. You can also find us on the SNY.TV Audio Network. Please rate and review all three of those. It takes a couple seconds, and it would very much be appreciated. Make sure you follow Brian on Twitter. That also only takes a couple seconds, at Brian_Bassett.
And you can find Corey on Twitter, at Corey Griffin NBC. Send him taco pictures.
Yeah, lots of taco pictures. I think that'll do it for us this week. We'll be back later in the week to preview next week's game against the Arizona Cardinals. Three more primetime games coming, America, for the New York Jets. So get ready. It could get ugly. Thank you very much for calling in. Thank you for listening. Until next time, keep calm and Jet on.
Where exactly is Jets sadness?
Thanks for listening to the Jets Blog Postgame Podcast, part of the SNY.TV Audio Network.